This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come. Hack.
If you could make yourself a bit taller, would you do it? The only condition is doctors would have to break your legs and insert metal rods in there. I can feel you squirming just thinking about that. But the reality is some guys are doing this. So how big is limb lengthening surgery? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're going to speak to those who are thinking about it to ask why.
I imagine myself just 3 inches taller and just looking around and I felt pretty happy.
Yeah, if you've felt insecure about your height, how has it impacted your life? Have you ever considered limb lengthening surgery? Do you know someone maybe who has? 0439757555, message in. Also coming up, are oysters the most underrated environmental superhero? We're going to explain what that means soon. First though,
Hack.
DoorDash and Uber Eats drivers are set to earn minimum wage if the Fair Work Commission signs off on a deal with the Transport Workers Union.
On Triple J.
Yeah, I bet they've saved your life at least a few times. Delivery riders appearing at your door in a desperate time of need. They've completely changed the hospo industry, haven't they? You're not only dropping off your dinner, they're doing your shopping for you, they're heading to the bottle-o maybe. And it's not easy. If you're a delivery rider or driver, you know that. The stress is very real. And I'd love to hear from you if you're doing this job now. How are you finding work? What pressures are you under delivering food, drinks? 0439757555. Because two of the biggest platforms, Uber Eats and DoorDash, have agreed to set a minimum pay and improve conditions for their riders. And this news comes the same week MenuLog is shutting down. Ariana Lachente has been out in Melbourne with some riders to see what it's like.
What time is it now? It's 2 p.m. now. It's going into the quiet hours. I just got a Coles order, which I'm going to take. And yeah, see how many I can get by tonight.
I'm with Rowan in St Kilda, and he's just accepted his first job of the day with Uber Eats.
A lot of it is Coles orders, especially these days. I don't know why. I get sick of doing Coles orders.
But you don't have to pick them yourself, right?
I do.
Oh, you do?
I have to walk around the supermarket looking at the list of the things that they get and putting in a basket.
Rowan is a delivery rider for Uber Eats and DoorDash, and he's on a bit of a mission this week. He's trying to crack at least 60 deliveries, ideally 100, to get bonus cash.
Uber often give bonuses. It's always like, do this amount of jobs and we will pay you this much. Between Monday morning, 8 a.m. and Thursday night, midnight, if I do 60 jobs, I'll get an extra $185. And if I do 5 after that, I'll get an extra $20.
The bonuses are a big part of how he makes money on the app.
That's basically how I get my income, by chasing these bonuses.
But he reckons he's about 10 orders behind, because his e-bike is out of action.
The e-bike is at the shop getting, I think, a chain fix.
You've got your road bike today.
This doesn't make the same amount of money, the road bike. My gear fails all the time. I always got to manage my gear. The hardest part of the job is making sure I'm in the position to go out and ride a bike for 40 hours a week.
Being a food delivery rider is Rowan's full-time gig. He says the bike upkeep and being super strategic with his bonuses so he makes enough money sometimes feels like running a business.
Sometimes they've gone months and they don't give bonuses at all. So that means my income per week drops by a couple of hundred and my lifestyle suffers and they take it away like it's nothing. And I hear they're doing some kind of thing to make it fair pay because it feels very gamified.
Gig workers have campaigned for years for a better industry, and really this is a first in the world.
Uber Eats and DoorDash have reached a deal with the Transport Workers Union to set minimum pay rates and improved conditions for riders and drivers. It's with the Fair Work Commission now for approval.
Yeah, you can just head off. If you have to rush, you have to go.
Okay, so a lot of my day sounded like this. These food delivery workers are busy, but I wanted to find out how they feel about the pay deal.
That's great. I mean, the sooner they roll out, it's better, because honestly, it's such a volatile market.
Arka is a rider for DoorDash, and I was able to catch him because it's a sunny day. which for him means fewer orders.
I'm just going to do this for like 3 hours. I'm going to go home, cook myself some dinner, and yeah, call it a night and hopefully have a better day tomorrow, because today does not look that busy.
Arca reckons a minimum pay would really help out.
So I would say it's a good side hustle, not the best way to make your main income, I would say. Today you could be making 30 to 35 an hour or even 40, but tomorrow you can be even 15 or even say 20, which, you know, is a huge difference. A minimum pay in play could really make it better and more meaningful for riders to, you know, work in this industry.
A few weeks ago, Menulog announced it was closing, and today is officially the last day you can make an order. When I open up Menulog, it's actually directing me to Uber Eats.
Yeah, this is like the one that you look for orders.
Yeah.
If it's even redder, means it's busier.
Oh, as in like, yes. The darker bits is like, yes. Oh. Nicholas is showing me the map that workers can see on the Hungry Panda app. He's only been a rider for 2 weeks.
It's actually quite fun because you get to travel around and explore other places, and they are paying us as well.
The workers I spoke to really like the flexibility of the job. This is Kaiser, who rents her bike, something I saw a lot of workers do.
I think it's a freedom for me, and because I'm new here to the Australia.
Smaller platforms like Hungry Panda and Easy aren't part of the pay and conditions deal.
I broke my arm riding the bike and I didn't get anything. I just had to wait till my arm was better and live off savings and then get back to it.
Rowan would love to see sick leave and injury compensation in this deal.
If you're a beginner, there's a high learning curve.
Rowan has delivered more than 20,000 orders. Knowing the busy suburbs, recalling addresses from memory, the public holidays worth working, and hacking the bonuses all boost his hourly rate.
That only comes from experience, from knowing how the algorithm is going to work.
Minimum pay might just let him breathe.
Oh, I'll probably be working till probably 9 o'clock tonight.
Where will you go?
I'll probably go this way. See ya.
Bye. Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente making deliveries around Melbourne there. Not making deliveries, observing, but watching how other people are doing it. And it's tough work, as you just heard. People running around supermarkets trying to pick up your groceries to get them to you on time, to get bonuses. So could we be seeing a bit of a breakthrough here in terms of rights and pay? Well, someone who knows a heap about this is Alex Veen, a senior lecturer and employment relations researcher at the University of Sydney. Alex, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Good day, Dave. Thanks for having me.
What is this minimum pay stuff? What would it actually mean for delivery riders?
So what's been announced is basically that the union and two of the major platforms have agreed that they are going to be paying workers a certain rate of $31.30 per hour. But the critical thing to note here is that when we're talking about that rate, it only applies for the periods that these workers are actually performing delivery. So it's when they receive an order on their app, they accept it, they go to the restaurant to collect the order and then deliver it to the customer. Critically, what's not included within this rate are any periods sort of between different gigs that they might be performing.
Right. So if they're not picking up an order or delivering it, they're not being paid.
Correct.
Okay. And how does this relate to the minimum wage in Australia? Is there a connection there?
So I think we need to see the two still quite distinct from another. One of the things that we've seen is some reforms around the gig economy in the last few years by the Albanese government. And one of the decisions they made is they basically don't want to make these workers employees. So discussions around minimum wage for that reason don't really translate to this new form of work. Instead, the solution that we've seen is this so-called employee-like category that they've created, for which there can be now minimum standard orders. And what it really does is put at least, I guess, some sort of floor in place for these workers where previously basically nothing existed.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that those delivery riders will be enjoying the same minimum pay wage as other Australians.
Correct. And it remains to be seen in practice what the announcement will actually mean for workers in practice, whether or not that will bring them on par with what, for instance, a casual worker would be earning, remains to be seen.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Alex Veen, who's a senior lecturer, employment relations researcher at the University of Sydney. We're talking about delivery riders and the kind of rights, conditions that they have that they may expect to receive in the next few months and years. Alex, what are your rights if you're a delivery rider? Because we've just been hearing from some a few minutes ago, and it does sound like it's pretty rough work.
Yeah, I think these are workers that for a very long time have basically been unprotected because of the engagement model that the platforms have used, whereby these workers were independent contractors effectively sort of running their own businesses rather than being employees of these organizations. I think what we've seen is we've seen a sort of build up of rights for these workers over the last few years, and it has differed a little bit from state to state in this country as to what protections have been afforded in terms of workplace health and safety issues. Earlier in the year, the so-called deactivation provisions came into effect, which has meant that workers who are being terminated by a platform, their account is basically stopped. They now have the ability to go to the Fair Work Commission to seek a reinstatement.
And obviously, protection safeguards for people who are injured on the job is another important factor to consider too.
Absolutely. These riders probably would have always been protected to an extent under workplace health and safety laws across the different states. But I think what is really positive about the deal that's now been struck between the union and the platforms is that it sort of puts it beyond any reasonable doubt that platforms have a responsibility to make sure that there's some personal liability insurance for individuals operating through their platforms. At the same time, the deal between the parties make it clear that, for instance, workers themselves will be responsible for ensuring that they've got adequate third-party coverage.
One of the questions that people who use these platforms will have is all this going to make my orders more expensive? Are customers going to have to pay more as a result of these changes? Is that likely?
Yeah, I think it is likely we'll see a slight increase in the cost for these services, but I don't think it will be a major change. I think from the consumer's perspective, we're looking perhaps at a few cents per delivery.
Very interesting stuff. Alex Veen from the University of Sydney, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got a lot of messages coming through on this one. Someone says, I feel like delivery driving should be weighing up the pros and cons if you're in this industry. You can't have the freedom to drop in and out of the job while having the security of a full-time job is someone's comment there. Let's go to someone who's actually waiting for an order right now, listening to us while out on the road. Belle is with us. Belle, you're a delivery driver. Why are you doing this kind of work? Do you love it?
I do really love it. So I do it because I love the flexibility. I like being able to start my day when I feel like starting my day. And I mean, it covers the bills that I need to as long as I put in the right amount of hours. So I'm quite happy with it, to be honest.
Okay. And are you excited about these potential changes that could see some minimum pay, that kind of thing?
Definitely. I'm pretty concerned. Like, for example, if the car like stops working, I pretty much lose like an income, so that like having sort of like a little bit of insurance about my income would be a little, you know, just a huge relief, basically, just a huge weight off the shoulders.
Yeah.
It would make it more like viable to keep doing it, really.
Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of other riders are saying now, that we just want a bit of protection there to make us feel more comfortable. Belle, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. Hopefully your order arrives soon. You're not waiting too much longer. Someone else on the text line says, I feel like delivery driving should be weighing up all of the pros and cons. Another person says, I'm a part-time dasher and it often feels like exploitation. You get punished for not accepting orders that will make you work over time you have committed. A minimum wage would help those who do it full-time. And someone else says, delivery drivers are sole traders. They should account for their own sick leave. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack.
I like to think of them as ecological superheroes, the functional equivalent to trees in a forest.
On Triple J.
Could oysters be the key to saving our oceans? They're a delicacy. You may know them as just those things on seafood platters that you hate or that you love, or where pearls come from, or because of their alleged aphrodisiac properties. But more than all of that, they're also known as the kidneys of the ocean, and there's nowhere they're needed more right now than the waters of South Australia, as April McLennan's been finding out.
Hey guys, when we look into the water today, what color does it look like? It's green.
I'm on a glass-bottom boat in Coffin Bay on the Eyre Peninsula. It's about a 7-hour drive from Adelaide.
Should it be green? What colour should the water be? Well, it should be blue, right?
And steering the boat is 27-year-old marine ecologist Manny Katz.
Now, algae is a bit of a hot topic at the moment, right? With the algae bloom. We don't have a harmful algal bloom happening here, but we do have lots and lots and lots of nutrients in Coffin Bay. We've got massive water quality issues here. Part of the reason is because we ripped out all of the filter feeders, most of them.
The filter feeders Manny's talking about are native oysters or Angazi oysters.
A single oyster can filter about 200 litres of water per day. And when you multiply that by billions of oysters, you get really healthy, clean waterways, which right now South Australia is struggling with.
He reckons native oysters used to span across 1,500 kilometres of SA's coastline.
Now we have less than 1% of them.
Where'd they all go? Manny says the human population explosion that happened with colonisation.
Between the period of the mid-1800s to early 1900s, we fished them out. We dredged the seafloor. We indiscriminately scraped up all of these oyster beds to eat them. We used to consume them en masse. They were the cheapest food for the early colonizers.
In 2023, Manny reached out to me because he'd been diving all across Coffin Bay and finding these large dead oyster shells buried in the sediment, and he wanted to know more. I basically told him he'd discovered a dead reef, a lost reef.
Dominic McCaff is another researcher based at the University of Adelaide. Together, he and Manny are trying to revive the native oyster reefs at Coffin Bay.
Now, one of the issues with oyster reef restoration is that we've removed a lot of the hard material, the oysters themselves, from the sea. So in order to give them a suitable place to grow, we need to put something that is suitable for them to grow on the sea floor. And one of the things that we can use are oyster shells.
Basically, they get biodegradable bags filled with recycled and cleaned Pacific oyster shells and drop them in strategic locations on the ocean floor. The bags provide a hard surface for native baby oysters to attach and grow.
So these grassroots programs are good because they provide an opportunity to incrementally build reefs over time, which is what this project will do.
Now, the project is expanding after the South Australian government gave Manny and Dominic more funding. And it's not just to benefit the oysters themselves. The hope is restoring the reefs will help with a much bigger problem that's here right now, SA's toxic algal bloom. They'll use the extra cash to create 25 additional sites of renewed native oyster reef from Coffin Bay all the way to Kangaroo Island.
There's no one silver bullet for addressing the harmful algal bloom, but we need to start to plan longer term, and that's what this investment in restoration is all about.
So, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to check out our experiments. You guys want to come on down? What we wanted to do was create an ecosystem in a bag.
Back on Manny's boat, he pulls out one of the oyster bags from the ocean.
It's going to take time. These oysters, they take about 5 years to reach full maturity, and we're only really going to start to see the benefits of that a bit further down the road. It's going to take time.
So while they won't help with this algal bloom, they might help prevent the next one.
So when we talk about, you know, all the reasons why the algal bloom happened, right, we had excess nutrients, there was Murray River runoff, there was upwellings, marine heat wave, but then we also have this historical loss of these oyster reefs, which if we had them, this might not have happened. Or maybe it would have happened to a lesser extent.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting there. Really interesting stuff. People finding out that oysters were once affordable food. People used to eat when they couldn't afford much else. All right, we're going to move on now. We're going to talk about something that has been making headlines recently. Limb lengthening surgery.
Hack.
Tall or short men?
I don't know what it is. If you're tall, immediate, attractive.
The truth about height is that it matters a lot.
I told my dad that I went on a date with a guy who was in an open relationship. And my dad said, why would you do that? And I said, he's 6'4".
On Triple J.
Yeah, for as long as there have been people, no doubt there have been jokes about someone being short. And in recent times, maybe there's been a bit more of an effort to embrace height differences. Think Short King Spring, maybe. But still, height anxiety is very real. And if you can relate to this, I'm interested. How has being short impacted your self-esteem? Message in 0439 757 555. Hearing from people already, Tom in Newcastle says, I had a date once, it was all going well and we were going to kick on until we stood up and she realised that I was shorter than her. That was that. I wouldn't go snapping my legs, but I can see why others might think about it. Yeah, because some people are thinking about taking some pretty drastic measures to make themselves taller, including some very specific surgeries, as Background Briefing reporter Amelia Turzon's been finding out.
My social media was filled with everything related to the height. Like, girls are saying that they need heighted people. Everyone is, like, mocking short kings.
Jack, whose name we've changed for privacy reasons, first started to feel short when he got to high school.
People start mocking about my height and people start saying that I'm short and they make short, like, short king jokes upon me.
Jack's in his late 20s and he moved to Australia from Pakistan earlier this year. He's been worried about his height for a long time, but coming here, it made it worse.
I was becoming more depressed. I was constantly thinking and comparing my height with others. I was not able to focus on my work.
He reckons that social media has a big impact too.
I was, like, getting a lot of videos related to the height, like how people feel about the height, how people mock other people about their height, how girls reject different people based on their height.
Jack didn't know there was a procedure that could make him taller until earlier this year when one of his Aussie friends mentioned height surgery. It's a procedure where surgeons break your leg bones and then they insert metal rods between the broken bones. The rod is slowly extended over weeks or even months, forcing new bone to grow. At the end of this, you need to learn how to walk, run, even jump again. It's big on TikTok and Instagram, but this surgery has its risks, including nerve damage, bone infection, leg misalignment, and this temporary condition that people call ballerina feet, where the toes start to point. I've spoken to some Aussies who've had this operation. They're worried about speaking out because of the stigma. But I also spoke to Aaron, who's in his 20s and he lives in America.
I imagine myself just 3 inches taller and just looking around, and I felt pretty happy.
Aaron's operation was in May and he's still on crutches while he learns to walk again.
You're kind of like slowly like learning how to like walk normal, but I don't think you can really speed up that walking recovery until you are cleared to walk, like your bones have enough bone that you can just like walk and assist it safely.
Back here in Australia, Jack is still researching this surgery and he's looking at the costs for clinics overseas.
I also started research on the YouTube. I came to know that people are getting it. And then after that, I also tried to find out more and more people. So basically, I was researching to know about the other people's experiences. And then after that, I also research about the cost of the limb lengthening.
He's not totally sold. He saw a psychiatrist recently who prescribed him meds for his anxiety, which he says is helping.
I'm not using social media currently. I'm not consuming any content related to that limb lengthening or how people think about shorter people.
He's still saving for height surgery and giving himself a 6-month deadline.
I can logically think about this surgery, and I can logically think about the pros and the cons, and then logically decide whether I'm going to do this surgery.
Hack on Triple J.
Amelia Turzon reporting there, production by Jackson Worthington. And if you do want to hear more, check out the Background Briefing podcast. You can also read Amelia's story on ABC News Online. Messages coming through now. Someone says, I watched a video recently of a guy that had surgery to go from 5'8 to 6'5. His arms are no longer proportionate with the rest of him and he looks like Slender Man. Someone else saying, wouldn't mind being shorter, to be honest. I might finally be able to find some clothes that fit me at the op shop. But there are a lot of people who are messaging in saying, yeah, I do feel this. I have had some anxiety around my height. So what's behind this? Is it pretty common? Well, let's find out now with Ben Buchanan, a clinical psychologist who specializes in male body dysmorphia. He's with us now. Ben, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Dave. Pleasure.
How big of an issue is height anxiety? Like, is this something you hear a bit about?
Yeah, so I practice as a psychologist and specialize in body dysmorphic disorder. And so most of the people that come into my office have some sort of body image anxiety. And in particular for men, that can really focus around height. Sometimes it's other things like their shape or their hair, but height is certainly a big anxiety for men.
Have any of your patients that you know of considered this surgery?
Absolutely. I've seen a number of people who have actually had this surgery, and everyone that I've seen with it has actually come and sought my services after they've received the surgery, because they had this false hope that getting their legs lengthened was going to be the answer to their prayers, going to improve their confidence. But then some months or even years later, they find that their confidence, their self-esteem is still really low. And so that's why they'll come and see me, because they've finally realized that it's not a problem with their height, it's a problem with their self-concept.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about what people should be considering before undertaking a surgery like this. Like, do you have any advice, Dr. Ben, if someone is thinking of limb lengthening surgery, what should they be thinking about?
Yeah, so I think this goes for any cosmetic surgery. And I think that the first things are to consider whether you've got an overvalued idea that you think that your whole world will change and that your life will be, you know, 10x improved if you get a surgery. If you're thinking thoughts like that, that's probably a sign that you're overvaluing the surgery, and it's actually a false hope, and that the issue might actually reside in your relationship with yourself, and how you value yourself. And so if that's happening for you, I suppose there's lots of recommendations. I think one key thing is to consider the content you're consuming online, you know, particularly with leg lengthening or other appearance anxieties. We can end up going down a rabbit hole where we're researching the particular procedure, and it can really funnel us into thinking that that's the only option for someone like us, whereas there are other options, and I recommend considering your relationship with yourself and learning to value yourself on things that don't involve appearance.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Dr. Ben Buchanan, a clinical psychologist. We're speaking about height anxiety, and guys in particular who are considering or who have undertaken this limb lengthening surgery. We're hearing from people on the text line. Someone says, I'm 5'8", which is the average height of the average Australian male. Anyone shorter or taller is a freak of nature. I'm just saying that. Someone else says, the only problem with height is when bean poles insist on standing up at the front of live gigs and block the view. Yes. That is a complaint a lot of music fans often have when we're talking about height. Someone else says social media is a killer for self-esteem. Disconnecting from Instagram has infinitely made me happier. Yeah, Dr. Ben, I wanted to ask, do you think social media trends talking about the perfect height of men in particular could be doing a lot of damage? Do you think people need to ease up a bit on the short king jokes?
Absolutely. And there are, I think it's really unfortunate that there are like short jokes. I really like that comment where someone said I'm 5'8 and everyone else is a freak of nature. You know, I suppose it's the idea that people come in a diversity of shapes and sizes. And, you know, we all have little things that we don't like about our body. We all have things that we wish were different, and certainly lots of us engage in sort of cosmetic procedures, some of them like really intense, like leg lengthening, and some of them less intense. I think that we've got to be valuing ourselves on things independent of our appearance, even though in certainly the social media landscape, there's just so much content pushing us down that path. And the evidence is really clear. There's been huge amounts of research on this, that the more we consume social media, the lower our self-esteem gets, and particularly our body image. So I think a key thing is curate what you're consuming online. And if you notice that it's body image related content, see if you can unfollow, unsubscribe, block.
All of that kind of stuff, very useful and very interesting kind of advice from you, Dr. Ben Buchanan. Thank you very much for joining us on Hack. I really appreciate your time.
That's a pleasure.
And we've got so many messages coming through. Someone says, I'm 4'9" and was offered this kind of surgery as a teen. Didn't seem worth it for an extra inch or two. Another person says, I never worried about my height until I transitioned from female to male. And then all of a sudden, being a short man, I became the butt of every short joke. What is up with that? And then someone else says, I work in pain management and this procedure can be extremely painful for the duration of the limb lengthening, far beyond the initial surgery. Interesting to get all of your takes on the text line. That is all we've got time for Hack for now. If you do have any concerns that this story has raised for you, remember you can always go to the Butterfly National Helpline on 1-800-334-673. Lifeline is always there as well on 13 11 14.